A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's prompt this week is a big one, and he's specific about what he wants. He's asking for the actual mechanics of the Hong Kong-mainland-China relationship, in practice. Not the headlines, not the broad strokes, but the named laws, the dates, the documents you need at the border. What's still genuinely separate, and what's converged? Currency, courts, immigration, internet, press, customs. What's the real status of each, and by which legal instruments did the convergence happen? He wants the texture of crossing between Shenzhen and Hong Kong in both directions. What changes the moment you're on the other side? What daily life looks like? What the Greater Bay Area Integration Project is actually doing to that boundary? What 2047 means in practice, given how much has already shifted ahead of it? And he wants to understand where Taiwan sits in relation to all this. How Hong Kong's trajectory changed Taiwan's reading of its own options, because that's part of the same picture. He says he wants to come away able to explain this to someone else. So we're going to start at the border itself, because that's where the abstraction becomes a physical experience.
And the border is the right place to start, because it's the thing that makes one country, two systems, real. You can't walk from Shenzhen to Hong Kong. You go through a checkpoint with armed guards, separate immigration counters, customs inspections, and a document check that would stop you cold if you showed up with the wrong permit. It's not an internal border in the way crossing from Connecticut to Massachusetts is internal. It's one of the most heavily controlled crossings in the world.
And it's always been that way. But the nature of it shifted. The architecture was never meant to be permanent. The 1984 Sino-British Joint Declaration and the 1990 Basic Law created a 50-year arrangement, one country, two systems, with an explicit expiry date of June 30th, 2047. The separate legal system, the Hong Kong dollar, the independent immigration control, the common law courts, none of it was a permanent settlement. It was time-boxed.
Right. And that's the thing most coverage misses. People talk about the erosion of Hong Kong's autonomy as if it's a betrayal of the original deal. But the deal itself had a countdown clock built in. Article 5 of the Basic Law says the socialist system shall not be practiced in Hong Kong for 50 years. Not, shall never be practiced. 50 years. The question was always, what happens when the clock runs out?
And what's happened is that Beijing didn't wait for the clock. The boundary has been re-engineered well ahead of 24/7 through specific legal instruments with specific dates. So let's walk through what's actually still separate, what's converged, and how.
Start with what's still separate, because it's more than people assume. The Hong Kong dollar is still the Hong Kong dollar, pegged to the US dollar, not the renminbi, at about 7.8 to 1. That peg has held since 1983, and it's still there. You can't pay for your noodles in Wan Chai with renminbi unless the shopkeeper is doing you a favor. The currency boundary is real.
The courts are still common law courts, nominally independent. Judges still wear the wigs. The legal reasoning is still in English and follows precedent rather than statute in the mainland civil law tradition. Hong Kong's court of final appeal is still the highest court in the territory, and the mainland's Supreme People's Court has no direct jurisdiction over Hong Kong cases. That's the formal structure.
Formally. Immigration is still separate. Hong Kong controls its own border, issues its own passports, maintains its own visa policy. A mainland Chinese citizen can't simply walk into Hong Kong. They need a two-way permit. That's the Wang Lai Gang Ao Tong Xing Jing, the exit entry permit for traveling to and from Hong Kong and Mekong and Macau, and it requires an endorsement for each trip. It's not a right, it's a permission, and it's quota-based in practice.
And going the other way, Hong Kong permanent residents need a home return permit, the Huai Xiang Zheng, to enter the mainland, even though they're Chinese citizens. A Hong Kong identity card and a Hong Kong passport won't get you across the bridge to Shenzhen. You need a separate document issued by the mainland authorities. Customs are separate, too. Hong Kong is a free port with no tariffs on most goods, while the mainland has a full customs regime. You go through customs going both ways.
The internet is the thing that hits you immediately. The moment your phone latches onto a mainland tower, you lose Google, WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, the New York Times, and you gain WeChat, Baidu, and the Great Firewall. It's the most instantly felt boundary in the world. There's no gradual transition. It's a hard switch. One side of the Shenzhen Bay Bridge, you're on the open internet. The other side, you're not. And Hong Kong's press environment, at least formally, still operates under different laws than the mainland's. No prior censorship, no state licensing of journalists in the mainland sense, but that's where the formally starts to do a lot of work.
Because the convergence has been real and it's been fast. Let's go through the instruments.
June 30th, 2020. The Hong Kong National Security Law, imposed directly by the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress through Annex 3 of the Basic Law, which allows the central government to add national laws to Hong Kong's legal system in matters of defense and foreign affairs. The NSL was the first time Beijing used Annex 3 to impose a law that directly criminalized political conduct inside Hong Kong. Four categories of offense: secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces. Maximum penalty, life imprisonment. No jury trials for NSL cases. The Secretary for Justice can issue a certificate requiring a bench trial with three designated judges.
That was the breach. The basic law said Hong Kong would enact its own national security legislation under Article 23. That was supposed to be the bargain. Hong Kong tried in 2003 and 500,000 people marched and the bill was withdrawn. Beijing waited 17 years and then did it itself.
And then Hong Kong did pass its own Article 23 legislation, the Safeguarding National Security Ordinance, on March 19, 2024. This closed the gap. The NSL covered four categories of offense. Article 23 added five more: treason, sedition, sabotage, external interference, and theft of state secrets. The penalty for treason and insurrection is now life imprisonment. The law also gives the police extended powers to hold suspects without charge for up to 16 days, extendable by a magistrate. This isn't the mainland legal system, but it's no longer the Hong Kong legal system of 2019 either.
And the courts. December 30th, 2022, the NPCSC issued an interpretation of the basic law that effectively allowed the chief executive to certify which foreign lawyers could represent defendants in national security cases. This was a direct response to the Jimmy Lai case, where Lai had hired a British barrister, Tim Owen, and the Hong Kong courts had approved it. The NPCSC interpretation overrode that decision. The chief executive now has the power to block foreign counsel in national security cases by issuing a certificate saying the representation would threaten national security. That certificate isn't reviewable by the courts.
That's the part that's hard to overstate. A core principle of the common law is that the court controls who appears before it. The NPCSC interpretation transferred that control to the executive. In national security cases, the chief executive gets a veto. It's a specific, named, dated override of judicial independence, and it happened through the basic law's own interpretive mechanism. It was legal in the formal sense. The NPCSC has the power to interpret the basic law, but it hollowed out the separation.
The electoral changes too. In 2021, Beijing overhauled Hong Kong's electoral system. The Legislative Council was expanded from 70 to 90 seats, but the directly elected geographical constituencies were cut from 35 seats to 20. A new Candidate Eligibility Review Committee was created to vet all candidates, ensuring only patriots could run. The result is a legislature with no meaningful opposition. The 2023 district council elections saw a turnout of about 27%, down from 71% in 2019. The machinery still looks democratic, but the output is predetermined.
So that's the political and legal convergence. But there's another kind of convergence happening at the same time, the economic and infrastructural kind, and it complicates the picture. The Greater Bay Area.
The GBA is the mechanism that's making the boundary porous for the people Beijing wants to move through it. The outline development plan was launched in February 2019. 11 cities. Hong Kong, Macau, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, Zhuhai, Foshan, Huizhou, Dongguan, Zhongshan, Jiangmen, Jiaoqing. Over 70 million people. The stated goal is a world-class city cluster, an integrated economic zone that competes with the San Francisco Bay Area and the Tokyo Bay Area.
And the concrete mechanisms are what matter. September 2018, before the formal GBA launch, actually, the mainland introduced the Hong Kong and Macau residents' residence permit. This is the gang Awa Jumin Juzujing. It gives Hong Kong and Macau residents who live in mainland cities access to social insurance, public housing, public education, and basic medical insurance. It's not citizenship, and it's not a hukou, the mainland household registration system, but it's a path to live and work in the mainland without renouncing Hong Kong status. Before this, a Hong Konger working in Shenzhen was essentially a foreigner for administrative purposes. Now they can enroll their kids in local schools and see a doctor.
The welfare state boundary is dissolving. Hong Kong residents can now receive their Hong Kong government old age allowance while living in GBA cities. They can use mainland medical insurance. The Hong Kong Hospital Authority has been running a scheme since 2023 that lets Hong Kong patients get follow-up consultations at the University of Hong Kong Shenzhen Hospital, paid for by the Hong Kong government. The boundary between the two healthcare systems is being managed into irrelevance for a specific class of people, Hong Kongers who are willing to live on the mainland side.
July 2023, the Northbound Travel for Hong Kong Vehicles Scheme. Hong Kong private cars can now drive into Guangdong without a separate mainland license plate. Before this, crossing the border with a Hong Kong registered car required a dual plate, one Hong Kong, one Guangdong, and the Guangdong plate was expensive and quota limited. Now you apply online, get approved, and drive across the Hong Kong-Zhuhai-Macau Bridge. The border is still there. You still go through immigration and customs. But for car owners, it's become a toll booth.
That's the phrase, isn't it? A toll booth. The border used to be a hard stop. Now, for the right people with the right documents, it's a queue.
And the financial convergence is further along than most people realize. The Stock Connect scheme launched in 2014 that Shanghai Hong Kong Stock Connect and Shenzhen Hong Kong Stock Connect followed in 2016. Bond Connect launched in 2017. These allow international investors to trade mainland-listed stocks and bonds through the Hong Kong Exchange, and mainland investors to trade Hong Kong-listed stocks through the Shanghai and Shenzhen exchanges. The currency stays separate, you still settle in Hong Kong dollars on one side and renminbi on the other, but the capital flows across the border in a managed channel. It's a porous boundary for money, even as the boundary for people remains tightly controlled.
Which brings us to the central tension. The political boundary has hardened. The NSL, Article 23. The electoral changes. The economic boundary has softened. The GBA, the residence permit, the car scheme, the financial connects. Beijing is simultaneously making it harder to dissent and easier to commute. The person who wants to live in Shenzhen and work in Hong Kong, or vice versa, has more options than ever before. The person who wants to organize a protest has none.
And that's not an accident. The GBA is the carrot. The NSL is the stick. They're part of the same strategy. Hong Kong's value to Beijing has always been as a financial gateway, a place where international capital feels safe entering China. The GBA preserves and deepens that function. The political crackdown ensures that the gateway doesn't become a platform for political opposition. The message is, make money, cross the border, live where you want, but don't challenge the party.
So what does 2047 actually mean in practice?
Legally, Article 5 of the Basic Law says the socialist system won't be practiced in Hong Kong for 50 years. That expires on June 30th, 2047. After that, there's no automatic continuation. The one country, two systems, arrangement must be renegotiated, extended, or allowed to lapse. The basic law doesn't specify what happens next, it just says 50 years. The assumption in the 1980s was that by 2047, the gap between Hong Kong and the mainland would have narrowed enough that the transition would be smooth. China would be richer, more open, more rule of law based. Hong Kong would be less exceptional.
In a strange way, that's what's happened. Just not in the direction the British negotiators imagined. The gap has narrowed, but not because the mainland liberalized. It narrowed because Hong Kong was brought into alignment.
The practical reality is that 2047 is less a cliff edge than a formality. the NSL, Article 23, the electoral changes, the NPCSC interpretations. These have already transformed one country, two systems, into something closer to one country with local characteristics. The Hong Kong dollar might survive past 2047 because it's useful to Beijing to have an offshore dollar-pegged currency. The common law system might survive in commercial cases because international contracts need it. But the political autonomy, the thing that made Hong Kong a separate system, is effectively gone. 2047 just makes it official.
That brings us to Taiwan.
Taiwan watched all of this. The one country, two systems formula was originally designed for Taiwan. Deng Xiaoping proposed it in the early 1980s as the framework for unification. Hong Kong and Macau were the test cases. The 1992 consensus. The ambiguous agreement that there is one China, but with different interpretations of what that means, was the diplomatic basis for cross-strait relations for decades. And the offer to Taiwan was essentially, you get what Hong Kong got, your own legal system, your own currency, your own way of life, for 50 years after unification.
Then 2019 happened. The Hong Kong protests. Millions of people in the streets. The sustained civil disobedience, the violent crackdown that followed, were broadcast live into Taiwanese living rooms. The 2020 National Security Law was passed the day after China's legislature approved it, with no consultation with Hong Kong. Taiwanese public opinion shifted dramatically. Support for one country, two systems, among Taiwanese dropped to single digits. It's now consistently below 10% in polling.
The 2024 Taiwanese presidential election was fought partly on this. The DPP candidate, Lai Ching-te, who won, campaigned explicitly on the lesson of Hong Kong. The message was, look at what happened to the promise of autonomy. Look at how fast it was hollowed out. That could be us. And it worked. The DPP won a third consecutive term, something no party had done since Taiwan's democratization.
Beijing's own messaging has shifted in response. They've basically stopped presenting Hong Kong as a template for Taiwan. The one country, two systems formula is now framed as a Hong Kong-specific arrangement, not a Taiwan offer. The Taiwan Affairs Office talks about a one country, two systems, Taiwan model that would be more generous. But nobody in Taiwan believes it, because Hong Kong demonstrated that the promises are revocable. The legal instruments that hollowed out Hong Kong's autonomy were all exercised through the Basic Law's own mechanisms. Taiwan would have no more protection than Hong Kong did.
That's the knock-on effect that I think is underappreciated. The Hong Kong experiment wasn't just a failure for Hong Kong. It foreclosed an entire pathway for Taiwan. The one country, two systems option, which was Beijing's preferred framework for unification for 40 years, is now politically dead in Taiwan. It can't be sold to the Taiwanese public. Whatever unification looks like, if it happens, it won't be on those terms, and that narrows the range of options considerably, on both sides.
If you're trying to explain this to someone else, the through line is that the boundary has already been re-engineered. The physical border is still there. The checkpoints, the permits, the separate currencies. But the political boundary has been hollowed out by specific legal instruments with specific dates, and the economic boundary is being managed into porosity by the Greater Bay Area. 2047 is just the formal expiry of a system that's been quietly dismantled ahead of schedule, and Taiwan saw the whole thing.
The question that hangs over all of this, and I don't think there's a clean answer, is whether the managed porosity of the GBA is the future, or whether it's a transitional phase. Is the endpoint a fully integrated Hong Kong-Shenzhen metropolis, where the border is essentially administrative, like crossing from Brooklyn to Manhattan? Or does Beijing want to preserve some degree of separation because the separation itself is valuable? The separate currency, the common law courts for commercial disputes, the open internet for international business?
The evidence points to the second. Beijing doesn't want to destroy Hong Kong. It wants to own it. A Hong Kong that's just another mainland city loses its utility. The whole point of Hong Kong is that it's not Shenzhen. The NSL and Article 23 were about making sure Hong Kong's openness doesn't become a political threat. The GBA is about making sure the openness continues to generate economic value. The tension is whether you can have the second without the first eventually killing it.
The talent flight complicates this. Hong Kong lost something like 130,000 residents in 2020 and 2021, the largest outflow since the handover. A lot of them were young, educated, English-speaking professionals, exactly the people who make Hong Kong work as an international financial center. The government has been trying to lure them back with tax breaks and housing subsidies, but the political environment is a hard sell. You can't pitch Hong Kong as the same as before, just safer, when the safer part means you can be arrested for sedition.
Before we wrap, Hilbert has been sitting on something for the last 40 minutes, and it turns out he has a very specific memory of this border.
I crossed that border every week for 2 years, late 90s. I was a junior logistics coordinator for a freight forwarding company out of Kwai Chung. We moved electronics components between Shenzhen and Hong Kong. Capacitors, resistors, the little stuff. I had a cargo manifest, a temporary work permit, and a passport full of stamps. The queue at Lok Ma Chau could take 3 hours on a Friday.
What was the crossing actually like back then?
Hard. Proper hard. Separate everything. You got off the bus on the Hong Kong side, walked through immigration, got back on the bus, drove across the bridge, got off again on the Shenzhen side, went through mainland immigration, got your passport stamped, got back on. If you had cargo, you waited at the freight terminal while they checked the manifest against the physical load. Every box. It wasn't a toll booth. It was a wall with a door in it.
And now?
I went back in 2019, before the protests got bad, took the high-speed rail from West Kowloon. The mainland immigration checkpoint is inside the Hong Kong station now. You clear Chinese immigration before you even board the train. I didn't leave Hong Kong and then enter China. I was in both places at once, legally speaking. The border moved.
The co-location arrangement. That's the Guangzhou-Shenzhen-Hong Kong Express Rail Link. The checkpoint is jointly operated. You go through Hong Kong exit immigration and mainland entry immigration in the same building on Hong Kong territory. It was hugely controversial when it was proposed because it effectively cedes Hong Kong sovereign territory to mainland jurisdiction for immigration purposes.
It's efficient. I'll give it that.
What happened to the warehouse?
The warehouse in Shenzhen. It's gone. It's a residential complex now. Hong Kong style, they call it. Built under GBA rules. The metro stop is called Huhai. The boundary I used to cross is a station on Line 2. My old boss lives there. He's got a residence permit. He sees a mainland doctor and collects his Hong Kong pension. He says he doesn't think about the border anymore. It's just a commute.
That's exactly the managed porosity we've been describing. He's living it.
The border became banal. That's the thing. It didn't disappear. It just stopped mattering for people like him. For the right kind of person, with the right documents, it's an inconvenience. For everyone else, it's still a wall. My old assistant, mainland Chinese, no permit. She's never been to Hong Kong. She lives 15 kilometers from Central, and she's never seen it.
That's the other side of the porosity. It's selective. The GBA makes the border disappear for Hong Kong professionals and capital. It doesn't make it disappear for the mainland worker in Dongguan who'd like to visit but can't get the endorsement.
I had four of those two-way permits in a drawer at one point. Different endorsements. Business, tourism, family visit. They expired. I kept them because they had the stamps. Seemed like they'd be worth something someday. They're not. They're just paper.
Hilbert, I had no idea you'd spent that much time on the crossing.
11 years in logistics. Then I drove a delivery van in Kowloon for a bit. Then radio. It's all loading and unloading, really.
The question that stays with me is what 20747 actually changes if the border has already become what Hilbert described, a commute for some, a wall for others, and the legal instruments have already converged this far. The answer may be that 20747 changes very little, because the real transformation already happened between 2020 and 2024. The expiry date is a formality. The system it was supposed to expire has already been replaced.
For Taiwan, that's the entire lesson. The promises were written into a basic law with an explicit 50-year guarantee, and they were hollowed out in half that time using the law's own mechanisms. Taiwan doesn't have a basic law. It doesn't have a 50-year guarantee. The offer Beijing made to Hong Kong was the strongest offer it's ever made to any territory, and it didn't hold.
If you want to explain this to someone else, start at the border crossing, because that's where the abstraction becomes a physical experience. The permits, the queues, the phone switching networks. Everything else? the NSL, the GBA, the 2047 question, Taiwan's calculus, flows from the fact that there's a line on the ground, and for 40 years the question has been, who gets to cross it, on what terms, and who decides?
Thanks to Hilbert Flumentop for producing and for the passport stamps.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you got something out of this episode, tell someone about it, and start with the border crossing. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.